Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio!
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 August 29th, 2012. Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J. Cat Moore. Now, for those of you that don't know, this is not just your average edition of Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm doing this show tonight, one day before the two-year anniversary of the passing of the late, great J.C. Bailey. I felt it was only right. I did one shortly after his passing. I didn't do one last year, but I felt it was only right to keep this guy's name alive the best way I could by, you know, doing this show, having on a few guests to, you know, share their stories and memories and, you know, all the thoughts they want to put out there. So I'm going to do my best at doing that. Now, for those, because I really want, you know, people to possibly listen to this and actually know a little more about JC than they did to begin with. If they know nothing about JC Bailey, here's my description of what he was as a wrestler to me. He was mostly known for his deathmatch style, but in the same token, this guy was what's known as a hybrid wrestler. He could do anything. I mean, you could put this guy into a strong style match with Chris Hero or B-Boy, and he'd nail it. You can put him in there with some of the best high flyers out there. He was in there with Matt Sydal, otherwise known as Evan Bourne, you know, back far before he was Evan Bourne. He was in the ring with Sanjay Dutt. I mean, the amount of different things that this guy could do, there was really no end to it. And, you know, as far as the gimmick matches, the death matches, he went above and beyond. He did some of the riskiest things in the world that you can possibly imagine. If anyone doesn't know anything about the deathmatch style and just saw some of the stuff that JC did, you can tell that. I mean, this was the highest level of deathmatch wrestling. And, I mean, what he did is really matched by nobody. One of the things to me that always completely stood out, when JC walked out to the ring, I can best describe it with the term ring general. Because when he walked out to the ring, now a lot of people, you know, they shit on the deathmatch style. They just see it as, oh, you know, they're just hitting people with stuff and they're just swinging stuff and cutting themselves and all of this. Well, the thing that separated JC, and a lot of guys have this clear separation from just that quote-unquote garbage wrestling to making it more of an art and its own style that is to be respected. You would see now, you know, to your casual fan, you would see light tubes and barbed wire and chairs and ladders and fan-made weapons and all sorts of things like this. Now, some wrestlers would just walk out there and get themselves involved in it somehow and figure it out as the match went. And, you know, I'm sure there was a lot of on-the-fly stuff going as well. But when you saw JC hit that curtain, you'd immediately see his eyes darting left and right, looking at where the placement was on everything that was going to be used in that match. And you'd see him make the smallest changes, just walking around the ring, slapping hands with fans, and doing, you know, his entrance. The whole time he was focused on where this was, where that was. You'd see him move, you know, one thing from one corner to the next. You'd see him set up a ladder over here. You'd seen him, you know, move something, slide something back this way. Like, he really had a gauge on what he had planned that he was going to do in that match. And I think, you know, it speaks volumes for the professionalism of some of these guys. They might do a style that people would say is crazy or this and that. But one thing that a guy, especially like JC Bailey, was not is unprofessional. And I think the way that he did it brought a lot more respect to deathmatch wrestling. And like I said, some of the stuff that he did outside of deathmatch wrestling, you know, showed that he's not just a deathmatch wrestler. I mean, he could do anything out there, work with the best of them. So, you know, hopefully people get a chance to see some of his stuff. You know, back in he worked IWA Mid-South a lot, you know, way back, and say like 02, 03 type stuff. He actually went into his first deathmatch tournament in IWA and went straight to the finals, which was a King of the Deathmatch is a 2-day deathmatch tournament. So you have to work once on the first night. And if you make it, you know, past the first round, you come back the second night and you have to work 3 matches in order to be in, you know, to the finals. And, you know, I guess at the time Ian had enough confidence in him or just saw something in him that knew he was that special. And first deathmatch tournament that I've seen him in, to my knowledge, it's his first deathmatch tournament, put him straight through the finals where, you know, he ended up losing to Madman Pondo that year. And that's considered one of the, you know, most talked about King of the Deathmatches ever to happen. If you, you know, talk to a bunch of people who know about, you know, King of the Deathmatch and stuff like that, that year, 03, keeps coming up. I mean, a lot of the, you know, the Necro Butchers were really starting to get noticed back then. JC, I mean, was just that young guy that nobody could stop watching because, again, the excitement of a guy that's that, you know, he wasn't a big guy, you know, and a lot of times way back, you would see nothing but the big deathmatch wrestlers, and they were just, again, a lot more just swinging things at each other, not working quite the technical style of wrestling into the death matches. And it was such like a, you know, a breath of fresh air to actually see something changed about the style of wrestling that JC loved to do. And, yeah, it's one of those things that never stops getting talked about, and rightfully so, because, I mean, you could tell he put everything out there, you know, that you could possibly do. And I believe it was the following year that he came into Tournament of Death, you know, the CZW Promotions deathmatch tournament. They ran like an invasion angle where Ian and JC and Corporal Robinson and I'm trying to remember who else was part of that invasion. But, you know, they came in there and, you know, did like an invasion angle. And then it became more or less the Tournament of Death was going to be an IWA versus CZW, you know, Tournament of Death. Now, this was another one of the deathmatch tournaments that is more popular than any of the others of its kind. Tournament of Death 2 was infamously the one that ended Nick Mondo's career. Nick Mondo and John Zandig came off the 25-foot roof. But JC was the Midwest version of what the East Coast was hailing in Nick Mondo. And another, you know, smaller guy that was doing that same type of hybrid wrestling. He would prove to not have the longevity in the business that JC did because, you know, like I said, I mean, that was, you know, a matchup between JC and Mondo, which was at the time a dream match because anyone who was doing tape trading and stuff knew that JC was this, you know, rising star over there. And, you know, everybody was all about watching Nick Mondo. So this was just, you know, a first round dream match. And it, you really, you know, got a quick sample of what this was going to be. I think it was the first round. I might be completely off on that. Yeah, no. It was the first round. And, you know, Mondo went over. Mondo actually won the whole tournament. But, yeah, you know, it was really good to see JC come over here. And we knew that, you know, we had another star on our hands. And as Nick Mondo left the business, it kind of went seamlessly because then, you know, we had more bookings with JC over here and JC proved himself to be, have far more longevity, as I just said, and to be able to do many, many different things. I mean, you know, he was part of the, you know, he had a good feud with Sanjay. He did a lot with Chris Cash prior to Chris Cash passing away. He had a big Cage of Death match that was Team Cash versus the Blackout, which was another one of those things. See, JC ended up being part of a lot of the best moments within everywhere he went, pretty much. And I don't think that's a coincidence. You know, the Blackout versus Team Cash Cage of Death match was definitely another one of those nonstop talked about stuff. So, you know, just again, no coincidence. At some point, CZW decided to, they were coming under a lot of heat for a lot of the different deathmatch things they were doing. They had a lot of things that were banned from the building and really had no option other than running their summer shows in Delaware or of what to do. It was either, you know, cut the deathmatches out of shows, which was almost impossible because of CZW being, you know, built on both the wrestling and the deathmatch, but they were very much known for pushing the deathmatches to the next level. So to pull them off the cards probably would have killed the company. And I'm not really sure exactly whose idea it was, but they came up with an idea to do an underground version of deathmatches. And they launched an ultraviolent underground, as they called it. They would film matches backstage where they weren't in front of fans. So for whatever reason, as long as it wasn't put on live in front of fans, it was more legal to use the different things that they weren't allowed to use in front of fans. So they would film them. And when they started it, it was actually like you'd sit there in the crowd, the show would be over, but you'd still sit there and you'd watch something going on backstage on the screen. And the start to that, they created a title, the Ultraviolent Underground title, and the very first holder of that title was JC Bailey, winning it over the Necro Butcher. And obviously a very wise decision in putting a guy like JC over for a new concept like they were doing. It wasn't the longest lived, Brent's asking me in the chat if, it only had, five or so matches. Well, they did a couple here and there. They also did one that was like in a junkyard, and it was Zandig, JC, and Nick Gage in a three-way. So, I mean, they were trying everything they could to continue doing the death matches any way possible. So, you know, what a better guy to put in there as one of your stars of this new idea than JC Bailey. And, you know, him and Necro had a great series of matches in that time. Just brutal stuff. like I said, I mean, there was really no limits on how far that these guys would go. Nothing that they would pull out of their, you know, bag of tricks. I mean, they would shock you nonstop. But, you know, afterwards, you wouldn't say, oh, I can't believe he would do that. You knew that these guys had no fear in them. They would take it to any level that they had to get the crowd going and to top the last thing they did. Now, it works both ways because, really, I don't know exactly how to feel about it. I know that, you know, a lot of this is, it's what JC loved to do, but it's also in the long run, you know, he died of brain injuries and, you know, at 27 years of age, I surely, you know, someone's life isn't worth that, you know, that style of wrestling, or maybe, you know, that style of wrestling to the extent that they did it. But in the same token, I don't think there's a thing you could have told JC that would have stopped him from doing it. I don't think there was, you know, an example that you can see in somebody else that would have stopped him from doing it, because it's what he loved to do. So, I mean, I don't know a way to stop it or make it safe or make it where that same type of guy isn't going to want to do it. I mean, I'd give anything to bring JC back. I'd take away every one of those, you know, matches that, you know, entertained me. If it provided this guy with life again, obviously that's never an option, but I don't know. I can only thank him for the entertainment he gave me, but man, that's terrible to see this guy lose his life at, you know, 27. So, I mean, that's just my feeling on it. You know, I don't know specifically, obviously, you know, any sort of shots to the head or, you know, and I'd imagine a lot of falls and stuff would do the same type of brain trauma. I don't know. I mean, it's just guesswork on my end because I'm only looking it through fans' eyes. So, I mean, maybe we'll get some guys on, you know, tonight. And I have a list of people who should be calling tonight. And anytime any one of them would like to, you know, give a call in, you can do so. And, you know, we'll get you on the air. What else? Well, let me see. Oh, and I mean, to the different things, you know, to the extent of where JC would go and the things he would do, man, like, are you still talking back 03? You go from JC in the ring with a Chris Hero, which, you know, he's now in the WWE developmental territory. He's known as Cassius Ohno now. So now when you see this guy, you know, showing up on TV, you know, keep in mind that a guy like JC was, you know, right on par with this guy in 2003. So, I mean, that shows you wrestling ability-wise and where this guy was, you know, just with his overall ability and possibilities. It's amazing. And then, I mean, in that same year, you take it to the side of the death matches, and, man, JC and Madman Pondo did, believe it was the first time ever in the United States. I think it was done in Japan before, but, the circus death match. That was, you know, in 03, you know, same year. And, it was pretty much, it was a ring completely barbed wire strung across the top, back and forth, and it was a complete net. Like a circus net, you know, circus death match. That's how it, you know, came up. So that was, you know, the concept of the match. And then there was just more or less a scaffold next to that ring that was, man, I'd like to say at least 20 feet in the air. And there was a couple different levels to the scaffold. And, yeah, I mean, the two of them just continually took bumps off of the scaffold into this barbed wire net. I mean, you're being caught by just strand upon strand of barbed wire. I mean, I think there was more time spent in that match cutting these guys out of the barbed wire once they landed in it, because it had to just destroy these guys upon landing, because it looked like such a delicate operation just to get these guys out of there. And yeah, man, they did, I believe, three spots, the final spot being a superplex off the top of the entire scaffold. And man, that was definitely, you know, the early going of me watching this deathmatch stuff, you know, back then, it was just the craziest thing I ever seen, because who would even think of that? I didn't see the one in Japan prior to that. And I just, I looked at this, like, these guys, man, this is what I mean. You know, later down the road, that match would also be, you know, after JC's passing, Drake and Scotty, you know, Scotty Vortex, Drake Younger, they did an homage to him last year at the Tangled Web. I forget which number it was, but it was last year's CZW's Tangled Web. And actually, in an interview that JC had done, he said the only thing that he would change about that match is he would have a second ring so they can involve wrestling in the match, and they could do other things other than, you know, these scaffold spots. So that's exactly what they did, is they had a whole nother ring with tons more weapons and different, you know, things in there. And, you know, Drake and Scotty worked, you know, a great match, and then still did actually all of the same spots off the scaffold into the barbed wire net that JC and Pondo did. So I thought it was a really, really good tribute, because, again, any deathmatch fan that dates back to, you know, watching in 03, you know, saw that right there. And I immediately saw the spots and was like, man, they're recreating it to the T. And, you know, Drake had said afterwards that that was the one thing that JC said he would change about the match. And, he tributed him in doing that. So, I thought that was really special stuff right there. That was, you know, something that definitely stood out. You know, B-Boy had started to be really big over in IWA, and obviously had his, you know, big breakthrough in CCW, and then he started to be pretty big on in IWA, and he got, you know, put in the ring with JC, you know, and they went, I think it was a Ted Petty tournament match. I'm not really positive on that, but I remember it back then. It was very, very hard hitting, and I'm kind of all over the place. I've gotten pretty comfortable with doing radio shows, I got to be honest with you. Like, if you listen to my Friday show, it'll be absolutely completely different than this. These, you know, the tribute shows are probably the only thing I actually get nervous at doing at this point, because it's, you know, it's someone that's gone. I take that stuff a lot more seriously than my normal, you know, shenanigans, because, you know, you want to try to make sure that you do them justice in saying what you're trying to get across. And, you know, if you make a point on any other topic, that's, you know, you can go back the next week and correct yourself or something like that. But again, when it's someone that's gone, I mean, you really want to get it right, and you want to, of course, be genuine in what you're saying. So, that's why I'm a little all over the place, little choppy in what I'm saying and trying to get to, and I'm also trying to keep my eye on the computer to see what, if I got anybody calling in. So, another match I remembered was at Tournament of Death 3. You know, this is the next year's tournament. He went in there in a match against Chris Cash. And this was more or less, who, you know, has also passed since, but Chris Cash really wanted to get into deathmatch wrestling. He had done a lot of ladder matches and done a lot of different things like that, and really, you know, wanted to get into that. And JC did pretty much brought him into that, you know, not in the sense of, you know, telling him to do it or anything along those lines. But what he did was he allowed him to have his first, I would guess, official death match, as it were. And, you know, I guess, you know, christened him, so to speak, into the deathmatch wrestling scene, because, you know, it obviously, you know, Cash would look up to a guy like JC, being another guy of, you know, not an enormous stature and an athletic guy who can do a lot of different things. And, yeah, that was, you know, yeah, he put him under his wing. And that was a, you know, great match. They did a lot of back and forth things and a lot of really, you know, innovative stuff. And, you know, you seen like the embrace after the match, and it was really, you know, it was really nice to see that, because you could tell that, you know, JC wasn't a guy that wasn't willing to help out another guy. That was, you know, exactly what he wanted to do in that match, is help out Chris and, you know, show him the right way to do it and take him under his wing. And, yeah, another match that, you know, I always remembered because of, you know, how sincere it was in the, you know, in what was intended. So, hopefully I should be getting a call soon. Anybody who did want to call that may be listening, you know, if I have your number down already, then, you know, you can give a call. It's 347-215-8300. And, if I don't have your number down or I'm not expecting your call, hit me up with an IM in the Facebook, and, you know, I'll know it's you calling, and then, take your call. Right. So, okay. What else do I got? Like I said, he came up in a time where, hold on, let me answer a question in the chat. So, he came up in a time where a lot of guys were, I mean, CM Punk, you know, he's the champion of the WWE right now. He's the, you know, the flagship. He's the guy that's right on top of that company. Daniel Bryan, another guy. Both of these guys were working in IWA Mid-South at the same time that JC was. So you got to know, I mean, the talent that this guy was working was top-notch. And, you know, he could hang with anybody. It really didn't matter what the style was. And that's something to be said. You know, everybody doesn't really realize until they, you know, maybe do some, you know, back searching, because, you know, guys like CM Punk, to people who only watch the TV product, just kind of came out of the blue. But if you do some back searching, you see all these guys that they actually worked back then. And now JC was another one of those guys that did all of that, you know, worked your Chris Heroes. And I mean, he could do anything. He really could. So, yeah. I'm really at somewhat of a standstill on what I have to say. So I'm going to take a break. And normally I have many different songs I would play, or some, you know, comedy type stuff. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to play JC's song again. The Linkin Park song he came out to. And, I'm going to do that, and hopefully I'll get a call. When I get back, I'll take the call and go from there. All right, I'm back. I said hopefully I'll be getting a call in a few. Another match I'll talk about. JC had a match with towards his return to CZW. They pretty much went into an angle with Cult Fiction and everything, and he ran in about he ran in and did, you know, an angle with Thumbtack Jack, you know, where he jumped him and, you know, hit him with a finish during a match with Nick Gage at Cage of Death, which set up a match with Thumbtack Jack and JC. And the name of the show was Walking on Pins and Needles. And it was a barefoot thumbtack match that then involved syringes on top of it. So another one of these matches that, again, you never knew what to expect. You really didn't. You knew that this guy, you know, these two guys, JC especially, you know, had it in him to pull anything out that, I mean, you really, you didn't know what to expect, but you knew that they were capable of anything that they wanted to do. You know, like I said, JC especially, because I had only seen some Thumbtack Jack for a small amount of time. And, hold on, let me see what I got here. All right, I have a call. I do believe this is the Ego Robert Anthony.
Hello?
You there?
Yeah.
How you doing? This is Ego, right?
Yeah, I didn't even press one. How do you know it was going to be me?
Yeah, I see your number on the switchboard.
Hold on. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. So, do you want to share some thoughts or stories about JC?
I have a lot of stories about JC. We only formally became like good friends when he came back to CZW. We're both in the Midwest, we've seen each other numerous times, you know, through different shows, but it was kind of like that high and by thing. But it wasn't until we were traveling the long over 24-hour total time trip from Indianapolis to Philadelphia and then my extra 5 hours to Chicago that we came like really good friends on the whole trip. So I always thought everyone, they loved Five Finger Death Punch. That was like his thing. And we connected on music a lot and, you know, different things like that. And then the best story, and I tell this every chance I get, is when we went to Wawa. And we go to Wawa, and he asked OMG, and he's like, hey, will you buy me this candy bar? And, of course, OMG is a sucker, and he'll do anything anyone asks. And he's like, yeah, sure. He's like, let me get a couple things, and I'll meet you in line. So he's like, all right. So OMG's, like, going off on his day, and he's, you know, doing whatever he's got to do in the Wawa. And he goes in line, he doesn't find JC, and he's like, oh, man, where was he? And so he just pays for his stuff, and he leaves, and JC's in the van, and we're all sitting in the van, and OMG's like, yo, JC, I thought you wanted a candy bar. I was going to get it for you. He's like, yeah. He's like, well, I just thought I'd steal it instead. So, like, he was going to get this candy bar bought for him. And he's like, oh, I'll steal it. And, you know, it's just such a hilarious story. We all just, like, laughed the entire time. I was like, man, it's so classic. And we just, like, kind of talked about it, like, the rest of the trip, how JC would you rather pay for this or steal it? And we just, like, make up these random things, like, Would you pay for this? Would you steal this? It was a good time. Right. He's a good guy, and you know, I miss him a lot, and you know, we all miss him. So, you know, it's one of those things.
Yeah, of course. So I mean, the whole time that you know he traveled back and forth from CZW to back home, that was, you know, completely like all the same car travel and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. The way the trip used to work was I would drive from Chicago to Scotty Vortex's house in Indianapolis, and then we would go get Drake if he was at work or at home, and then we would head out to Ohio and pick up Moxley or Irish Airborne. That I don't think they were there at the time. It was Moxley, and then we'd drive over to deeper in Ohio and pick up Brain Damage, and we go to Philadelphia, and then that whole entire trip back, we'd just drop I drop each and every one of them off as we go along, and then it was me from Indianapolis back to Chicago. So yeah, the trips were fun on the way there, but they were horrible on the way back. We were all tired, and I didn't do any death matches at that time.
Right.
Those guys were all messed up on the way home. You know what I mean? So like those way home trips were a little bit miserable for them. It was that excitement to get there, but that like, I want to go home and shower feeling. I just want to relax on the way home thing. It kind of sucked, but you know, we spent over 12 hours one way together. You know what I mean? So it was a good time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Now I had talked about it before and I said, you know, I'd hopefully ask some guys that were actually workers tonight,
yeah,
with their feelings on it. And was, you know, he died of, you know, brain complications and obviously was not helped by the, you know, the head trauma that he took over the years. Now, obviously these guys decide to do what they're going to do themselves. So, I mean, it's, you know, their own decision, but in the long run, do you think something should be changed about this? Because I mean, 27 years old in entertainment, I think there's a, you know.
So this is my thought on it. I've been doing this for 11 years, and who was it? Drake was the second person ever to give me a chair shot to the head, and that was in IWA. And even if you watch CZW, I think Sammy Callahan was the next person to do it, but I never really took any chair shots or anything like that to the head. And that was kind of like my decision throughout my career that I kind of didn't want to do that. And I kind of stuck by my guns, and my match has been pretty good without that type of thing. You know what I mean? But for those guys that, you know, that's their style, that definite style, I'm not going to go and tell them, hey, listen, don't do this, because I'm not their mother and I'm not their father. But if you look in the past, in a lot of this head injury stuff, you got to be a little bit more safer with when pick and choose your spots. You know what I mean? If there's if there's a show you're on and there's 30 people there and there's no DVD distribution and you know this tape's not going to get seen by a large audience, then you don't need to go balls out with these shots to the head. You know? Like, it doesn't mean like mail in your matches. It just means pick and choose where you want to do these crazy things, and is it worth it? You know, to me, like, I'm going to put on a good show in front of 30 people, but I'm not going to take these large risks that I would normally take, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So my thing would just be pick and choose your spots, and then that's going to be longevity in whatever style you choose to do. You know? But I think that's the best answer I could give anyone that, without sounding like a hypocrite, you know, because I've done these things. And the tail end of my career in CZW, like, there's things I wanted to do that I'd never done before just to, like, have that experience, you know what I mean? Like, I have a bunch of scars on my back, lower back from Moxley and going through the glass. And, you know, that's something I never thought I would do. And, you know, people ask me, oh, do you regret it? You have some scars on your back. And I'm like, I really don't regret it because, one, I can't see the scars because they're on my back, but I'm not deformed. It was something that I'm kind of proud of that, you know, I felt that it was necessary for that time and that I wanted to experience that moment. And I was safe about it. The cage of death, I've always wanted to be in a cage of death match as safe as I could be. And, you know, I have a couple scars in my hands. And 3 weeks after the match, I picked a piece of wood out of my head from Masada's skewers. But, again, I picked and choose my spots and I wanted to do those things. You know what I mean? So I'm not being a hypocrite. I'm saying that when I did them, they meant something. And I can't tell you how many times I've been on the show with somebody that took a risk that they didn't have to take. And they could have did something less dangerous and still been entertained. You know?
Yeah, that's understandable. Yeah, I mean, I honestly, and I'm a fan, so honestly, I'll eat up anything you give me, but I honestly do think that they do a little bit too much too often, you know, for the fans or what have you, because, you know, we take what we're given. We're surely not going to turn away, you know, 18 chair shots in a match, but you got to protect yourself before anything else, because, that, you know, I'd love to see every month for as long as your career can go rather than, you know, have you gone earlier. That's just not something I'm into.
Yeah. The thing that I kind of like attest to that is my very first, I'm a fan of deathmatch wrestling. I'm a huge fan. I've been a fan of deathmatch wrestling since I've been in high school. It just wasn't my forte that I wanted to do it. When it came time for me to work a non-deathmatch at my very first King of the Deathmatch tournament for Ian, I was super excited. I did commentary on some of the matches. And one thing I took away from that was that there was too much of the same things where the fans were burnt out by the end of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So the example I would give is Light Tube. I'll give Light Tube as an example, opposed to chair shots. When match one does like 10 Light Tubes, the fans are totally into it and they're all about it. It's the overkill when match 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then the main event has 30 Light Tubes in it. That 30 Light Tubes, the fans really don't care as much because they've seen it for 2.5 hours. You know what I mean? So if the Light Tubes are so dangerous, then make them the main event only and save it for the guys that know that they're going to do these spots without killing themselves. If the chair shots are dangerous, save them for these few spots, and then you're going to get more out of it when it comes to fan reaction. You know what I mean? But it's that thing that everyone wants to get their shit in, but they're not picking and choosing their spots is when, you know, things start getting wrong and people start getting hurt more often. And, you know,
right. Kinda... I want to add someone to the line that I think also knows a lot about this. Toby Klein.
Toby! Hello, who am I speaking with?
It's just Jay Cat, and you got the Ego Robert Anthony also on the line.
Hello, fellas. How are you this evening?
Doing all right.
I'm doing well.
Definitely wanted to ask you some of the, you know, questions of the things that we were discussing as well, but allow you to give, you know, your piece and stories or thoughts about JC.
Sure. First off, I have been retired for almost a year now. I have been contemplating coming back. There's a show October in near my hometown. I've been thinking about doing that show, but I don't know for sure yet.
Okay.
How about you, Mr. Anthony? You still wrestling pretty regularly?
No. I've been slowing down a little bit. I became a physical education teacher down here in Chicago, and I kind of basically only wrestle about once a month now down here in Chicago because of the real job, you know what I mean? I've been doing this for 11 years, and I had to start, like, I don't want to say growing up, but kind of get my life into order instead of just traveling from town to town and, you know, stuff like that. But I'm still having fun, man. How have you been doing? I haven't seen you in forever.
Yeah, it's been since December since I've wrestled, and I've been doing the regular job. I work up to 60 hours a week driving forklifts at a factory and got four boys, raising four boys,
Wow.
And another kid on the way, January due date. We'll find out next month what we're having. So.
Excellent, excellent. I used to drive a forklift as well.
So I'm just being a family man, raising kids and working a full-time job. One of the reasons I did retire from professional wrestling was because I became severely addicted to pain medication. And it was no secret to anybody when I was in the locker room, I was looking for it. Every day I was taking it. I went into a rehab a month after I quit wrestling. I went into a rehab, and I was in the rehab for over 30 days. And it's an everyday struggle. Now I'm in a 12-step program and trying every day to conquer my demons, you know?
Yeah. See, you know, that's something I really respect is that this business, before any of us got into it, it was filled with that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And it's how you choose to leave that behind. It really tells about your character. And I really respect it, that you saw a problem and you're saying, hey, listen, I need to step away from this and I need to get things right for my family before things end up being worse. You know what I mean? And I'm not going to say that I haven't done any of those things in my entire life, but I'm saying that you know when to walk away for your health. And that's people I really respect. Like, Drake Younger. Drake Younger has made a complete 180 in his life since having his daughter. And
right.
and he sent me a text the other day, and you know, just thanking me and about, because like I wouldn't lecture him, but I'd say, hey man, you know, you got to think about your family, you got to think about this. Same thing with you, Toby. You got to think about your family, and you know, that's the change
yep.
you want to make. It, we're not 21, 22 year old kids anymore, where it was just us. Now we have other people depending on us, and I'm really loving that guys are kind of taking that next step into, you know, the next level of, I need to care for someone else. And the guys that haven't left behind, I feel that the Drake Youngers, as you as well, Toby, and myself, they can look up and say, hey, listen, we're going to put the child's toys away now, and now we're going to start doing things as adults.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now,
Drake kept me up to date on his progress, and about the time I was going into rehab, I was text messaging him and calling him, and he was really influential in helping me get that started. And I really wish the best for Drake. I see that he's made a complete turn in his life, and that's good.
Definitely. Now, something that I had asked Rob before, Toby. Now, you know, JC, we lost JC to, you know, brain injuries and everything. Do you think too much is being done in deathmatch wrestling? And, you know, where's the line? And, I mean, it's really up to the guys to draw the line. And what do you think needs to change if, you know, you think that way?
Definitely. They do go all out. I know you guys were talking about that if there's no crowd and there's no DVD distribution, you can give it an easy match. You not necessarily phone in your efforts, but you can give it an easier match. But that was the thing about JC. If there was 30 people there, he was going to give them the same crowd as if there was 3,000 there. He didn't let up just for a small crowd and no DVD. You know, he would take the chair shots, take the fall, take just the massive amount of injuries to his own body. He would not slow down based on crowd or based on DVD distribution. That didn't matter to him. But I think guys have got to realize when to back up a little bit, because especially if they're going three or four times a weekend, the death match is not something to do three or four times a weekend. That's not something to keep doing night after night. You look at guys that have done it night after night, and they're just riddled with injuries, riddled with just personal problems.
Yeah,
right.
It takes a toll on you if you do that kind of match night in and night out.
How long?
Sure.
This is something I want to ask. Just as a, I kind of go in between wrestler and fan at times. So just as a fan. Because before me and you met, Toby, I've seen a lot of your matches and I've seen a lot of the stuff because, like I said, I'm a fan of deathmatch wrestling. Like, during your busiest time, like traveling, like how many nights a week would you do these death matches? Like traveling with, you know, Necro and the whole, you know, your guys' crew and stuff like that.
Sure. There was I'd say 2003 through 2006 or even 2007, there was close to a five-year period where it was three times a week, sometimes more than that, sometimes more shows on one day. But usually every Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we were wrestling. And a lot of times there for a while, it was me versus Necro.
Yeah.
And it would be that way for three nights a week, and then we'd do it again the next weekend, and that was like that way for a good close to five-year stretch.
Yeah, and it's hard to heal up, you know what I mean, right? Because you're doing that for so long, it's hard to heal up. And, like, I know, I've seen interviews and stuff like that where you guys, when you first came to CZW, you guys felt like the outsiders, right? Like, it was like their crew and then your crew. So I'm pretty sure you're trying to prove yourself and, like, really go hard every single night. So that kind of takes a toll on, you know, when can I heal up, you know? Right when you start feeling better on that Thursday, it's time to go again on Friday, and then you're getting hurt again.
Yep, it's true.
Yeah.
I know 2005, 2003, 2004, 2005, and even 2006, those are the years that I wrestled J.C. Bailey the most.
Yeah.
And every one of them was some kind of crazy stipulation. 2003, we worked in CZW and all kinds of crazy gimmick matches, staple guns and light tubes. And 2004, we worked in the King of the Death Korean for IWA Mid-South. 2005, we worked quite a few times for Pondo's IWA East Coast.
Yep.
Even CZW in 2005. So there was a good 3 or 4 year stretch where JC Bailey and I were involved in quite a few crazy matches.
Yeah.
And
it's all about, like, for me, my second match ever in life was with Corporal Robinson. And we didn't do a death match or anything like that. We just did a regular match because, you know, I was young and I didn't know any better. And what Corp told me was his first match was deathmatch stuff. And it's hard to turn down that money. And I think that's a big motivation for guys, too, is the money from, I'm going to say, just a regular match opposed to a deathmatch. You know, corporate.
Sure,
match.
I got this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to the point where I didn't want to do death matches. I was burnt out of them. So when people would call me and ask me to do them, I'd say, "Well, I need a plane ticket and $500." And I would say that just expecting then anyone not to call, but everyone kept calling at that point and getting me booked. Well, I was like, "All right, I'll go make some money then." You know, I would go do them just because I could get so much more money for doing them.
And that's a very good point because, you know, Toby, you're another one of those hybrid wrestlers like JC was. I mean, how hard is it for you to get bookings unless you do that top notch? You know, the things, you know, when you and Necro were putting on that match that before they got both of your names out, you know, on the introduction, you guys were hitting each other in the face. I mean, how hard is it to get a booking when, you know, obviously the promoters are wanting that caliber of thing and you're trying to protect yourself?
Sure. Not to change the subject, but you had mentioned Corporal Robinson. Oh, my, I'm hearing some things about him nowadays. I hope everything's all right with him.
Yeah.
Just yesterday I heard some bad things, and I'm hoping everything's all right. Last time I seen him was probably a year ago. I used to do some traveling with him as well, and I know that he has had some problems in the past, and it sounds like it's getting worse. So, I mean, my prayers are with him and his family. I hope he can get everything together. Sounds like things aren't going well right now for him.
Yeah, I've been hearing.
Sounds like he may be making some bad decisions in life right now.
Yeah,
right.
And I'm not going to point fingers on that, but I think it's a lot of the crew that he hangs out with, because I've hung out with that crew, and there's a lot of influence in that crew. So, you know what I mean? So I just hope he kind of, I just talk to that.
For sure. So, Toby, you got anything else you want to add about, you know, JC and your time, you know, with him and, you know, any stories
sure,
or anything?
The first time that my wife, Nicole, had ever met JC Bailey was at Death in the Valley, a show in 2010, I believe May of 2010. And we were planning our wedding and we wanted to get married in a wrestling ring and have a show and
right.
get married on the show. And, JC heard us talking about this, and he ran up and introduced himself to my wife and said that there, without a question, he wanted to be there with the ring. He said that he would come free of charge and bring
right.
the ring. He wanted us to get married in his dad's ring, and he was going to bring it and set it up for us. So, I mean,
wow.
That just shows you the kind of guy JC was, and it was great to be able to become a friend of his and have him as a buddy. I enjoyed working with him in the ring. I enjoyed hanging out with him outside the ring, and it just goes to show you what kind of person he was. He was going to drive 2 states away and bring a ring for us and do it for free just to let us have our wedding that we wanted to have. And it didn't play out that way. It didn't happen, but I sure wish it would have. You know, he was a good guy.
Of course.
Yeah, that was good stuff. My favorite match of his, it's not even a death match. And I was 20 years old. I think I was 20 years old. And at that time, I only worked for one company in Chicago. And this company, Sylvia, Carmine Espirito was running MAW out of Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
Yeah. And so Carmine calls me and he says, we got my number. Somebody said, "Hey, I need someone to do a show, and you want to do it?" And I was going to tag with Chucky Smooth versus Skullcrusher Rashi Brown and Jason Dukes. So I said, "Yeah, definitely." And the first match in the show was J.C. Bailey versus Ace Steel. And this was this was 2001, MAW. The show was called The Summer Sizzler. And when I saw that match, it was like I talked about it for years because I could never get the DVD about it. And J.C. and Ace put on this insane, without deathmatch, like match, and it was my first card in the my first time out of Chicago at a different company, and I remember being so blown away by it. Finally, when I became friends with Mike Burns and Smart Mark Video, I was like, "You need to find this DVD. I need it." And they finally gave it to me, and I have it. And I remember watching it back. Let me see, 2009 when I finally got it, and it's still an amazing match. If anyone's listening and they want to see an amazing non-deathmatch J.C. Bailey match, check it out. It's the Summer Sizzler. I'm pretty sure you can get it on at Smart Mark, J.C. versus
right.
Steel. It's just so good. And that match, for me, like holds up the test of time to show how great of a hybrid wrestler J.C. was.
Right. Sure. And, you know, for those who might not know out there, you know, Ace Steel is the guy who trained, you know, the biggest star on WWE television, CM Punk, today.
Yeah.
So... yeah, definitely.
No, it's crazy stuff, man. It's crazy stuff. I love how everyone's come together to remember JC because he's one of those rare guys that has an impact in everyone's life. You know what I mean? Like Drake,
for sure.
You know, everyone remembers the first time they met Drake or Necro, you know, things like that. JC's just like that. Everyone remembers the first time you met JC, or someone has a JC story or quote that he said. He was such a genuine guy. It just sucked that this happened so early in his life.
Sure was. For sure.
Oh.
Yeah. So, you there, Toby?
Oh, yes. I'm listening to you guys.
All right. You said you had quite a series of matches, you know, with JC, you know, in that time, you know, in CZW, you had it going and you were kind of more or less touring with JC. What was your favorite match that you had with JC?
Favorite match was a tag team match at CZW in November of 2005 called Shattered Dreams. It was Necro and myself against Nick Gage and JC Bailey because Justice Payne. Justice Payne did not want to get in the glass with us, so JC stepped in and filled in for the night. And we had, Taipei rules. I think we got our fists covered in glass, and we had sheets of glass in the corners. But it was just a fun match to work.
That's cool, man. I remember that match. I was there a lot.
Good stuff. And then, I cannot remember. I think we worked a Cage of Death with me, too, but I don't remember which one it was. But,
what was your first Cage of Death?
Oh, boy. Had to have been 2005, December of 2005. I don't remember who the teams was, but I remember being in the cage for that night. I think Zandig was in it, and Necro, and Justice Payne, and Nick Gage. I don't remember who all teamed with who, but...
How'd you get booked in CZW? Were you doing Ian's and then that's how you got the in on it? Or
it was 2002, the Tournament of Death, the first Tournament of Death. Mike Burns had called me up and said that he knew that I could get a hold of Homeless Jimmy. I was friends with Homeless Jimmy, so me and Homeless Jimmy headed out together out to CZW for the first time. I think it was the summer of 2002. And then after that match, CZW booked me and Necro to do a tag run together. So we started going out to the arena in Philly and working as a tag team. I think September of 2002 was the first time Necro and I had worked a tag team match there. But then they used me very rarely for a couple of years. I think 2003 I did the Extreme 8. And 2004 I did one or two house shows in Philly. And then in 2005, March of 2005, they started bringing me and Necro in consistently as a tag team. We started off a match against each other, and then after that, it became a whole year run every month. We did a tag gimmick, the Crazy Bastards tag gimmick, and then it led into a little bit into 2006. And then I don't know. I think I disappeared again until 2008. No, 2007, the end of 2007 I came back because I did the cage at the end of 2007. But I got basically, I got shunned from CZW for a while because me and Necro both, instead of taking high finish, or like big finishers in the cage, we both got rolled up or small packaged or some kind of cheesy pin, and it pissed the promoters off. So we disappeared from CZW for a little while after the Cage of Death 2007. But I think 2008 was a couple matches for them. 2009 was just one match for them, the tournament. And I think I faced Wax at that one.
Probably Wax last appearance.
And then once in 2010, and that was the last time I wrestled for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it definitely does seem, you know, similar to what we're saying is it's got to be harder to get the booking for a company who, you know, you solidified yourself as, well, even to quote Tough Crazy Bastards or, you know, one of those guys that were just going to go above and beyond. You know, and you said just a simple roll up finish was going to change the likelihood of them booking you regularly anymore. Right?
Yep, and it did too.
From what I heard from a lot of guys, it's hard to turn down that money. You know what I mean? And then once you're known for it and you put on like amazing death matches and someone's like, all right, hey, I want to book you. And you're like, all right, I'm going to do a regular match. They're kind of disappointed. And maybe you might not get that booking. You know what I mean? And I totally understand why those guys, you know, just keep doing these death matches. It's because you got to make money. And we all want to make money doing this. And then some of us don't, but we all want to, and if this is the where you're going to get the most of it, and you know you don't want to do it, you get lumped in it, and you get stuck.
Yeah, the death matches took me. They took me to Japan. I made money in Japan because of them. I went to the clowns, worked for the clowns quite a few years at the gatherings, made quite a bit of money there. And the death matches got me booked, got me making money. So even though want to do it, I went ahead and did it because I knew I was going to make better money at it. So.
Yeah, everyone wants to go to Japan, you know what I mean? And if they say, you know, come to Japan, you got to do this death match, and there's not that many people that are going to say no because you want that experience, you know, you want to go.
Sure.
Yes, very, very true. I want to go with this. I don't know. I mean, you guys have both been around JC for, you know, a lot longer than I have on a personal level. I mean, is there any more stories that you have, you know, to share about your time with him?
You go first if you want to.
All right. First time I ever traveled with him was to a town called Umatic, Indiana. I'm trying to remember which deathmatch tournament that was. It was King of the Death 04. And he was telling me about this guy named Manslaughter that was booked on the show. And Manslaughter dwarfs J.C. Bailey, or even me for that matter. But he was telling me he was surprised that Ian had got this guy to take the booking. And he was also telling me how if this guy has to face me or him, he's going to walk away. He won't do it. And so I said, well, let's see what happens. So we get into this little gymnasium there in Ulitic, and sure enough, this Manslaughter guy, he's like 6'10", 350 pounds.
Jeez.
The part looks scary and everything, but he finds out that he's wrestling me in the first round, and Ian says I forget the stips, but JC was right. The guy got a stomach ache, so he's going to go out and sit in his car and make himself feel a little better, so hour passed and we realized he had left. So JC had caught it right on the money there. He knew that this guy was going to skip out once he found out he had to work me or JC. So that was pretty funny that JC was able to just predict stuff like that and call stuff out of the air like that.
I'm going to add to the line. I actually got Drake on hold. I know his time is limited, so I don't want to not take Drake. Drake.
What's happening, fellas?
Drake, how's it going, man?
Oh, man, going great, man. Just, you know, enjoying life. And, you know, around this time of year, I, you know, kind of like the, you know, from the week of, like, August 23rd to August 30th, you know, because the 23rd is JC's birthday, and 30th was, you know, the day that he passed 2 years ago. You know, I always like to remember the, you know, the good times I had with JC and
absolutely
just all the awesomeness that he did for pro wrestling in such a really just such a short time, man. It's amazing.
Yeah.
We're all as workers and boys, we're all really blessed to work with him and be around him. And for those that were lucky enough to travel with him, man, we were real fortunate enough to just have his presence, like, you know, his contagious happiness and presence around us. And for those of us that are fans, man, we're, you know, whether we saw him on DVD or saw him live, which I know Jay, you and Nina, you know, saw him live a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just so fortunate to have got to see such a charismatic and you know, just a performer who would totally went above and beyond. And, you know, that gets passed around a lot lightly, but nobody really went out there and went above and beyond like JC. I saw him,
right,
you know, not too terribly long ago. I was watching that classic TLC match he had with Nate Webb. I think it was 05 maybe, but that's so funny. I see you and Nina, that he was on the hard cam side, because I think the hard cam was different back then. Yeah, it's so cool seeing you guys on there back in the day and stuff. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. And, they were saying earlier, you know, how you never forget the time when you first met a guy like JC and a guy like Drake. And one thing I never will forget is the first time I met you. I was actually hanging out at the back when you debuted a Tournament of Death. And,
TOD5.
Yeah, and it was hot as hell, and I had my shirt off. And, you know, anybody knows me, I got my tat and everything. And you were like, oh, man, hey, did you see his tat, JC? Check his tat out. It's off the hook. And this, and he's like, yeah, it's all right. And I laughed my ass off.
I
was like, that's some real shit.
That day, dude. So it was July 29th, 2006. Like, Terror Tournament of Death, like, in the middle of the humid freaking Eastern Seaboard summer heat night. Black canvas and... three matches, man. It was a rough time to debut, but I tell you what, I'm glad you brought that up, man, because anybody that knows JC, man, they know that, like, if he felt that you were, you know, that you could bring something to the table, man, he would so help you out in any way that he could. And you know, like a month and a half prior to that, you know, he gave me that Barefoot Thumbtacks match that kind of put me on, and then right after that, like, him and as well as Wax. But JC really went to bat to Zandig for me, and you know, Wax did as well. I don't want to take credit away from Wax, because he helped out a lot, but and get me there the first time. But whenever I got to bulldozers in Smyrna, Delaware that day. I walked into the makeshift locker room that they had there where the bar was, and JC kind of went off to the side to talk with John. You know how. You know, when you kind of the etiquette protocol is when you debut for a new company, you just come in, you grab a chair, you shake everybody's hands, and you keep your mouth shut, and you do what you're told, and you hope that you're invited back. That's how it goes.
Right.
Well, that's how it should be, at least. But anyway, JC kind of took the talk with Zandig off to the side, and then no more than a couple minutes later, JC came up to me, and he had that little grin on his face, man. I could tell that he had some good news to tell me or whatever. He said, hey, man, he goes, you're going to the final today. I was like, oh, shit, for real? It's my debut. He's like, yeah, man, you're going to the finals. He's like, so you got, like, three chances to, like, really get over. And he goes, you're like, because they did, like, that funky format that year where it was, like, three-way, four-way, four-way, which I wasn't a fan of, but...
Right.
He was like, you know, you're in there with me, like, every round. He goes, and it was funny. He goes, we might be in there with Zandig at some point. Like, he's cool and all, but just to, you know, just be careful, because he can kind of fuck you up a little bit.
So,
if he picks you up for Gorilla Press, just be careful, man. Just protect yourself. But I avoided the dick that day, but... Man, I just little things like that. I just really appreciate about JC. You know what I mean? Because he really he really put me on the map, and I don't think he ever knew it, but I, you know, he taught me a lot without trying to teach me a lot. You know what I mean? Just traveling with him and watching him, you know, the way that he sold and just kind of the charismatic ways and the way he would, you know, do the old school Memphis get him clapping in the beginning. I mean, this is that stuff that I do, and I, you know, I took a lot of his mannerisms and applied it to my character, and
right.
And you know, I'm just real grateful that, you know, not only was he, you know, my absolute brother and one of my, you know, my best friends ever, but that we had the chance to, you know, tear it up in the ring a few times too.
Definitely. Now, Drake, something I asked, you know, the guys, I definitely got to ask you too. You know, JC dying of brain injuries. I mean, what's your thoughts? Do these guys need to do less? I mean, we as fans take what we're given, and we sure don't need to lose any of you guys, you know, at the age of 27 or anything like that. So, I mean, what's
right.
your thoughts? Should there be less done?
Well, I mean, my thoughts, to be entirely honest, I don't think it was all entirely brain injuries. You know what I mean? I think there were some other factors that led into it. That's just my thoughts, you know, and I talked to him the night before he passed and everything. But that did have, you know, brain injuries did have a lot to do with it. You know, I think we just, as a brotherhood, we got to kind of be protective of each other. And, you know, that envelope gets pushed, but it can only get pushed as far as we allow it. But it's, you know, as far as his cause of death and things and sort of like that, I'd rather stay away from trying to comment on all that.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, you know, as it was pronounced and stuff like that, and, you
sure,
know, just
sure.
the thought
yeah.
of
yeah. Yeah, yeah, I don't, you know, we got to protect each other, but I think a lot of it goes on is what how we handle ourselves outside the ring and how we need to take care of ourselves, you know, outside the ring, because there's way, 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 way too many guys who, however the cause of death was, have been taken away from us way too early. And, you know, a lot of it could have been prevented from, you know, the way that we handle ourselves outside the ring. You know what I mean?
Right.
And JC passing on, it, you know, that it took me a while, but it really, really woke me up to, you know, realize, man, you know, I need to take care of myself. And I think, you know, JC is looking down on me and you know, helping me stay strong. And you know what I mean? Like I said, how we handle ourselves outside of the ring is we'll definitely deal into our longevity.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I understand that. What was your favorite experience or time you ever had with JC, Drake?
Oh, man. It's so many. Gosh. I don't know. I can't narrow it down to one favorite, but I can just... Speaking of
yeah,
one
sure
that pops off to my mind, it's kind of an outside the ring thing, but I think you guys might appreciate it. But so I was me and JC, we broke in Evansville, Indiana, at the Coliseum. It was like an old USWA building and stuff, and it was a really cool building or whatever. We'd work there every Wednesday night. I was like 17, he was like 18, and so one night, like the promoter was like, get funny with the money or whatever. And so JC, who was, you know, he was a genuine person, but he was a stand-up guy, you know what I mean? If he thought it's like the shit was wrong, he would stand up and he would take care of it, you know what I mean? And
right.
even being just basically a rookie or whatever, but this promoter was getting funny with the money or whatever, and there was this, like, storage place in the back of the, back of the venue or whatever. And JC is like, man, this motherfucker doesn't give us our money, man. I'm gonna fuck up all these tools, and I'm gonna take these tools. And this dude ain't gonna have no power tools left. I'm gonna go fuck sell that shit and never show up to his punk ass show ever again. And sure enough, the dude took care of everything. But it was funny, dude. He was just about to, you know what I mean? He was a little dude,
yeah.
Like 18, and I was green as a piece of grass in the middle of spring, but. I was like, oh, damn, this dude, JC's about to go off on this dude. Oh, shit, especially my first wrestling riot.
But that's
one that pops off my mind. You know, another one that that really stands out. It was, I guess it was just like a period of time. whenever JC first came up to IPW in Indianapolis, like in the beginning of 2002, when I very first started, and we both came from backyard wrestling. You know what I mean? It's not a lot of dudes that wrestle nowadays that didn't do backyard wrestling in the early 2000s, but we just me and him, we just clicked right away, dude. We were both a big fan back in the day of taking like the Vic Grimes front top rope front flip bump into an open chair, and we just clicked, man. He's like, oh man, you like to do hardcore too? I was like, yeah, man, I'm down with it for sure. And I'll still bust that bump out every now and again. I did it in the 60-minute match with Sammy, and it's kind of a little tribute to JC, you know what I mean? He was always a big fan of taking that little silly-ass bump, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing I can say, Drake, man. You've done nothing but phenomenal tributes to JC since he's been gone. I mean, that Tangled Web match last year, man, I don't know how you could work anything more to a T than...
Oh, dude, that was, I'm glad you brought that up, too. Dude, that was totally a JC Bailey idea, man. Like a couple weeks, like a month or so before he passed, it was like whenever he did Terminal Death, and it was him and Scotty in the finals or whatever, he was talking, because Mike Burns had just stepped down as Booker, and like he'd been talking with Mike Burns, the DJ. And he said he wanted to do the Tangled Web again, but he wanted to make it cooler, so he's like, yeah, man, we could have like two rings, and we could have like, you know, gimmicks in one ring, so that way you can like actually work a match, and then in the other ring, you know, you could have the Tangled Web and the scaffold, so that way you can like actually do spots and cool shit like that. I think he talked about that in the shoot interview too, and he would always tell me, he's like, yeah, man, I want to do it with you someday, you know, you or Scotty, I want to do it, DJ Herman Hill in 2010. And
right.
He was like, well, how are we gonna cap this off with you and Scotty? He was like, we started out with a dog collar, and then kind of it went pretty wild. And he was like, well, how the hell can we top this or whatever? And I was like, man, let's do the fucking, you know, the circus death match like JC style and shit. So he was down, and Scrawny Shawnee made it happen, man. So that was total tribute to JC, and and when I just did Cork and Hall the other. Last month, I did the big double stomp off the top, Bardstown Bam, I did the spot with him and Sunset Jack did with the syringe in the throat and stuff, and I talk to his dad every so often. His dad just always makes a point. It's like, you know, don't let people forget my boy. And I tell him, like, Joe, you ain't got to worry about that with me, man. And
Joe's probably calling tonight. I'm not really sure what's up, but. Yeah, man. And another thing I noticed you did, too, on this past Tournament of Death, when you did the ladder match with Rory, you definitely duplicated a lot of spots that he did with Chris Cash in the Tournament of Death match, you guys.
Yeah, totally, because DJ wanted it to be a tribute to them. And so I wanted to bust out a couple of the old favorites and do some new stuff, too, that maybe JC would think would be cool or whatever. And I wanted to tell you guys, like, whenever... August 30th, 2010 was like one of the absolute worst days of my life. And, I talked to him the night before, and he was so happy about, getting back to Combat Zone and settling down and getting married and, having a family and just all that white picket fence stuff that we all, a lot of us dream of. And, and whenever he passed, man, it hit me hard, really bad for a while. And I was like, I was real sad about it, you know what I mean? Like, oh, damn, I miss you. Oh, why is this happening? Yes, that and the other. But, at this point in my life, I can honestly look back and, sure, I miss him. I miss him to death, but I can smile knowing that, like, the time we spent together was really good and that we were genuinely true and good to each other and that, there's no regrets there and that, that he's in a great place now, and that he's smiling down on all of us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I try to look at it like that. You know, I just love him so much, and now that I'm married and I got a little 1 year old and stuff, and I remember whenever I first got engaged to Val, JC was so happy. He's like, oh man, I'm gonna get a tux for the wedding, this, that, the other, and he was real stoked and happy for me. And I know now that he sees I'm married and that, you know, we got a daughter and, you know, I'm clean and stuff, but, like, I know he's looking down smiling, and that makes me smile. And I just, you know, every day of my life, I think about JC every day, and, you know, I smile when I think about him, because I cannot smile thinking about Joseph Carl Bailey, man. That dude is just amazing.
Yeah,
for sure.
One thing my last CZW show at the Flyer Zone, which kind of made me smile, was that Drake has a JC bandana, and he kind of tapes it on the wall in the locker room. And I don't know if he does that regularly, but it, like, makes you smile, because then you never forget. You know what I mean? Like, there he is, and you know that he's there watching every single show. And it's something.
Yeah,
Drake is one of those guys. He's never gonna let that memory die. And every time someone sees that, you know, it's a reminder. Like, man, JC's here. You know, and you start thinking about him. You know, it's something great.
Yeah, totally, man. I do that at a lot of places. The bandana is always with me whenever I travel, especially. Like, I'm out in Cali now, and I'm working for a lot of new places that I've never worked for before. And, you know, and just I always know that even if, like, it's my first time meeting a bunch of new workers or whatever, like, I always got I always got my boy with me. JC's always with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they need to print up another run of those bandanas, because I've always wanted one. And by all means, whatever the funds can go to help out. You know?
Right, absolutely, man. Yeah, we printed those up whenever we did the benefit show for him in September 2010 out in Indianapolis. And I'll, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to follow up with the guys out there and see if we can get another round of those printed, man.
Yeah,
because
I'm out in Jersey, man.
I couldn't
get one live.
Yeah, of course not. Yeah, it was only, like, he could only print it off so much. And then we gave one to all the boys that worked the show, and then we sold those and t-shirts and gave the money to Joe and stuff. So
definitely.
But yeah,
for now,
man,
more,
I always take the bandana with me everywhere I go. So.
That's cool stuff. So yeah.
Drake. Drake.
Yes.
Go ahead, Toby.
It's Toby Klein. How are you, sir?
Mr. Insanity, man. I love you, brother.
I love you too, Drake. It's been fun listening to your stories and remembering about him. I am now going to head to work, so you guys have a fun rest of your tribute to JC. I love you guys. You guys take care.
You too,
Toby. I'll give you a call soon. You still got the same number?
Yep, I do.
Okay, I'll give you a call soon, man. We need to catch up.
Yep, sounds good, Drake. You guys all have a good evening.
All right, good night, Toby.
Care,
thanks for calling.
Yeah.
Yep, bye-bye.
So Drake, how's things going with you, man? Everything good on your end?
Yeah, man. You know, things are great, man. No complaints, dude. Family's good. My daughter just started walking, and that's just
nice.
Like a really exciting time. And I'm working for a lot of great companies out here in California, man. And I'm just real blessed to be out here. And this weekend's, Battle of Los Angeles for PWG, and then I got another tour for BJW coming up, which, I'll talk about some other time. So,
sure.
No,
sure.
Man, things are great, man. I'm really, really loving life and loving where I'm at in wrestling. And, I never forget about my brother JC, man, and how, who knows what would have happened if he wouldn't have gone to bat for me and got me booked at Combat Zone and pushed me to John, you know what I mean? That was
sure.
That's how brothers should be in this business, man. They should look out for each other for sure.
Drake, you've been around, JC a long time. Rob's favorite match actually of JC's was Ace Steel versus JC. And
Summer Sizzler 2001 for Carmine.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. Yeah, Summer Sizzler.
So now, other than the matches
that
you've been in.
Didn't Ace give him like the tombstone off the top rope or something like that?
Yeah, fucking first time I've ever seen in my entire life. The finish of that match is a tombstone off the top rope. It's
wow.
Insane. You have to see that match.
I guarantee that was JC's idea.
I wouldn't doubt it. What would, other than the matches you've been involved with JC, what would be your favorite JC match, Drake?
You know, my favorite match of his, I don't want to hold your program hostage here, so I'm just going to try to think without thinking.
Give me a top three, anything random.
Definitely JC versus Nate from CZW, the TLC match. I really enjoyed JC versus Sanjay Dutt at the arena. Any of their matches that they had, those were really dope. A match that I really enjoy. JC Bailey versus Matt Sydal, IWM and South for the light heavyweight title in 2004. It was dope, and JC was like the veteran of that match. You could tell they like led him along and stuff, and it was really killer stuff.
Yeah, oh, definitely good picks, man.
Those are all on JC's Best on the Indie series on Smart Mark Video, which all those proceeds still go to the family of JC. So if you don't have it, please pick it up. It's a really, really great shoot interview. It's like the most, super honest and super touching.
I watched it a couple years ago and I cried. I started to try to figure out to try to put up audio clips of JC talking, and I just couldn't do it, man.
It's too much, man. Yeah, and like the end where he gives like a real heartfelt shout out to like me and Danny Havoc and stuff, man. Like it's, man, that's real special, man. It's real special. I love him so much. I miss him, and the last words that we said to each other on, August 29th, 2010, was, I love you, brother. So that's always at peace with my heart, you know what I mean? He was always good to me, always real good to my wife. And, my dad, he would come to town, and we'd go to my dad's house and have dinner. And JC was part of my family, and I was part of his family. We really were brothers from different mothers.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I'm only but a fan, and it bothers me quite a bit, so I can only imagine, the personal relationship is, unbelievable.
Yeah,
to handle.
His dad gave me the, gave me the honor and, duty to give his eulogy at his funeral, and, that was really tough, man, but I got through it, and, I hope, everybody said that I did him proud, so...
Yeah, man.
I love him so much, dude, and I love seeing how much the fans love him. You know what I mean? That's awesome. Because nobody loved hearing his name, hearing like the reaction of the fans more than JC, man. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just these are the hardest shows for me to ever do. I've been doing the show for 2 years, and I've actually become pretty comfortable in doing it. And, I really never worry about what I'm saying, but when it comes to these tribute shows, man, I'm so nervous going into these just because it means so much.
I thank you for doing these shows, man. And, as long as it's from the heart, man, that's all JC would want.
Sure, man.
Cool, bro.
Yeah.
Well, Jay, man, I need to jump off of here, brother. I'm glad I was able to get on, and thanks for accommodating my schedule and stuff, brother. And thank you so much for doing these tribute shows, and all the fans out there listening, man. Thanks for always showing love for JC and for for me and Danny Havoc, and never forget how blessed we were to have JC wrestle for us. Tomorrow, show your love on Facebook, man, and everything. So yeah, man. Bam, baby.
Yeah, bam. Absolutely. So, yeah. Thanks for coming on, Drake.
Absolutely, brother. I'll talk to you soon, man.
Sure.
All right. Later.
So, yeah. All right. Rob, I'm kind of at a standstill here and there, but, do you have any more stories or, you want to bounce out or...
There's so many stories, what I'm saying? And, maybe some
I'm
of
up for
them. Yeah, maybe some of them are appropriate for this and some of them are not appropriate for it. But, like JC, I don't even know how to start, what I'm trying to say with the sentence. But it was never a dull moment, man. You guys got Twitter?
Yeah, I have Twitter. Right, I don't really go on it, but I have it.
Okay, okay. Well, like, if you follow me on Twitter, because I'll post some of the photos today or tomorrow. It's at EgoFan, EgoFan. it was Drake, and I just found that Summer Sizzler DVD. I was actually looking for it this whole time. It was Drake. It was Moxley and JC and good old Dan, Rodney Rush. I know. He's giggling because he knows Rodney Rush. Anyway, so it was after a CZW event, and Rodney Rush, he's a good guy. He's not a,
sure.
he means well. I'm going to put it that way. He means well.
Absolutely.
And so he would kind of like indulge in a lot of the things the boys would indulge in during the shows, and sometimes he would indulge in it a little bit too much. And when he would get too wasted, we would take advantage of him. So, not in the gay way, not that there's anything wrong with that. But we would take advantage of him and, like, do some crazy stuff, things with him. And this one, I actually have photos of it, and I'll post them tomorrow/later tonight. So Rodney got wasted, and he meets these girls at Nichols, the bar down the street from the arena. And he meets these girls at Nichols. Him and JC are talking to him, and everything's going well, I guess. And I guess they're more into JC than they are Rodney, but Rodney thinks they're into him. So they're like, hey, I was like, I'm going to Oregon Diner to get food. Do you guys want to come with? So we all go eat. And so it's me, Moxley, Drake, JC, and these two random girls that we've never seen again in our entire lives. And JC's putting the Mac on them, and Rodney just starts falling asleep at the table, like, sitting up. And we're just like, I'm like, oh, my God, is he falling asleep? And he starts drooling on himself. So fucking Moxley, like, I have video of Moxley screaming in his ear, and Rodney does not wake up. So fucking Moxley puts ketchup on Dan's head, like, on the left side of his head. And then JC gets up, and then he puts jelly on the other side of Dan's head. And then he's sitting there sleeping the whole time. And Drake's like, come on, man, let's go. We got to leave, blah, blah, blah. So Drake takes a giant thing of an iced tea, and he pours it down Dan's back to wake him up. So Dan gets all pissed off. He wakes up, puts on his CZW hat. Little does know, he never wiped off the ketchup or jelly on his head and drove the entire 12 hours home with ketchup on his head. And
wow.
The whole way there, me, Scotty, and fucking JC are making these weird little jokes pointed at Dan. Like, like Scotty be like, hey, JC, what's your favorite movie? And he's like, I don't know. I think it's Space Jam, because he's like, jam as in the jelly that's on his head.
Right, right.
And then they make some stupid joke of lunatic.
And he was driving?
Dan was in the passenger seat. We were all
there. Oh, okay.
Yeah. But he eventually started driving later on because he sobered up, and that was Dan's
goal.
Wiped
shit off his head.
So JC and me and Scotty, we'd all just, like, make fun of Dan the whole entire time. And it was just, like, one of those memories that I love, and I still have all the photos on my phone from that night of Dan with ketchup on his head. And it's like one of those things that I'll never forget because it was such a fun moment, and like JC was a part of that, you know. And then there's no secret that JC was a resident at the correctional facility down in where he was from, and he would just very openly tell us stories about jail if anyone knows me, I have this weird infatuation with jail, like in prisons and stuff. Like, I always want to know stuff. And like how things like that. So I think it was like the first time I met him, and he's like, do you want to know about jail? Like, absolutely, I want to know about jail. Tell me about jail. And like I wish Drake was still on the phone because I didn't remember it now, but he actually called Drake from his cell with an iPhone that someone like smuggled in their ass or something. And like JC was like, yeah man, this guy smuggled an iPhone in with his butt, and I was calling Drake, and we were watching YouTube matches of me wrestling, on this fucking iPhone that was in some guy's ass. And I was like, found this so fucking interesting. I was like, wow. And like, Drake was like, yeah, he called me from the cell. And I was like, totally into it. You know what I mean? Like, there's weird fucking stories about jail. And,
that's unbelievable.
That he would tell me about. So he's just such an interesting guy that when he talks, you listen. You know, you really wanted to hear what he say. You know, like, it sucks, you know. And I remember the day that he called me and told me what happened. I was just like, oh, God, really?
Yeah, he was straight up, man. It was definitely, you know, just talking to him out back, you know, a few times over the years and stuff. Definitely, you know, he just didn't hold back. He was a straight up dude. He wasn't an asshole about it, but you know, he just felt how he felt. He'd tell you how he was, and that was it. Like it.
Absolutely.
You know, that's why I think people love him so much, because there was no, you know, just trying to paint a different picture for the fans or anybody. He was just JC. Wherever he was real.
When he made his re-debut in CZW, when I was there, did you guys know he was there or no? Like, as fans, like before he came to the ring, did you guys see him out back or anything?
No.
Okay, so like, what was your guys' reaction like in the crowd? Like, I always wanted to know from a fan's point of view. Were fans like,
I marked out
that, or was it like, oh shit, Jason?
No, it's me myself. I marked out. I mean, I'm a fan. I'm a CZW fan since 2001.
Yeah.
I marked the fuck out. Like, the JC Bailey is back. Are you kidding me? Like, I mean, you already had Nick Gage versus Thumbtack Jack to start
the
show.
Yeah, to start the show.
No rope barbed wire, right?
Yep. No rope barbed wire.
Yeah.
To start the show.
And then you're heading towards the finish, and JC Bailey returns and hits him with the cross brain buster
on the
fucking blocks. Then you're like,
on the center blocks.
Oh, it's fucking over. This is the shit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is match one. Ah, man, you can't get more hyped than that.
Yeah, I always wonder what fans' point of views with certain things were, because, like, Drake took a lot of effort in hiding JC from the people that day, because, you know, he wanted to go out, he wanted to hang out with Clark, he wanted to do this, he wanted to do that, and we're like, yo, you got to stay in the back, you know, you got to do this, you got to do that, and I always wonder, like, how did the fans, like, react, because I watched it live, like, I was upstairs where the hard cam was, I remember just, like, sitting there watching, like, my first thought was, this place is going to go fucking nuts for Nick Gage. Like, as soon as they walk in the door, they see no more barbed wire. Like, as a fan, I would be like, holy shit. And then off the top of it, you get fucking JC return. Like, so those hardcore fans actually follow. Like, you're going to blow your fucking mind, you know?
Right.
And then those are those things. Because I always think of things as fans first, you know? Like, when... You know, Danny Havoc and Sami Callihan had their matches, you know, when they, like, the little things, like, do a bump into the upside-down high-heel shoe particle board thing, or their cage death match. Like, I get so hyped about it. But it, like, sucks because I'm in on everything nowadays, so I'm not really, like, surprised.
Right.
So, like, I always wondered how fans looked at certain things, like, whoa, were you, like, shocked when this happened? Or, you know what I mean, like that. So that's what I always wondered about with, like, that JC thing, because a lot of people, I remember hearing one person go, it's JC Bailey, and then the whole crowd was like, oh, you know, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know, I definitely think I started chanting it at one point or another. I started a lot of chants through my time. I'm not trying to toot my own horn or anything, but I'm fucking, I got a big mouth on me, and, you know, I just start yelling shit sometimes, and people, you know, understand. But, you know, I don't know. I was personally really excited about it. I didn't know that beforehand. And especially, you know, even being friends with Billy Graham, and he never fucking told me. So that's
so, which is
my phrase right there.
You got to keep a secret from the old Billy Graham. Man. No, Billy's a good guy. I love Billy. I haven't seen him in forever.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, I'm looking at it right now. He gave me this, like, he's a legit Native American Indian. He gave me some stuff that you burn, or like Native American rituals.
Right.
I never burnt it. I am looking at it right now in a bag that he gave to me. But he's such a nice dude, and you know, like it's a shame I don't see him more often next year. But no, I'm really happy to do that.
All right. But yeah, man. You know, I don't know. It was a big moment to me. I love to see his return and the things he did even since he came back. I mean, his, you know, the tournament of death match he had in the last tournament of death he appeared in as with Abdullah Kobayashi. My
Absolutely.
God.
Dude, what about his match with TJ, Thumbtack Jack?
The Pins and Needles. I had talked, you know, earlier in the show before anybody got on about that and said, barefoot thumbtack alone. You got to be, I don't know, man. I can't even fathom that. You step on like a kid's toy, which I have three kids, so believe me, you know, in the middle of the night, you know, you almost bump on the floor. So I can't imagine, you know, barefoot thumbtack, and then they add syringes, and then, oh, man. It just,
dude, like, I personally, because I'm such a fan of deathmatch, I personally don't try to find out what the guys are doing before the matches, because I you know, I want to do my thing, I want to watch it, I want to be entertained and shocked, and I want to pop with everyone else. So, like, I did not want to sit in on the JC, Thumbtack, Jack, like, put together, because I just wanted to see what would happen. When that when that went off, I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, holy shit, like, in the neck, in the foot, like, because I was, like, I kind of walked by, and right here, DJ's like, do not use needles. And I was like, all right, well, they're not using needles. If they use needles, I'm like, oh, fuck. Things just got you know what I mean? I remember being so excited about that match. And it's like, you watch it back on DVD. Sometimes things are better live than they are on DVD. This thing's fucking insane on DVD still. You know, I was like, this is one of those things that you watch, and it's never going to get old, you know? So
that, that's the thing. I actually put it out, I think last week I was talking some shit about paydays and stuff and how guys don't get paid enough. And I brought this up, and only because, you know, like, I've heard a lot of, like, you know, people talking in the back about stuff that people aren't supposed to know. And I never put it on this show. It's just not, it's not my deal. But because JC's gone, I figure it's really not going to hurt anybody in that aspect. And that match happened. And like you said, DJ said, no needles, no needles. I'm standing there out back talking to a couple guys. JC comes flying out the back irate after that show, and he goes, $75 fucking? That doesn't even carry my fucking travel. What the fuck, man? I'm done with these motherfuckers. And I'm like, whoa, what the fuck, dude? And, like, he looks, like, right in my eyes, and then he continues his tirade, and I'm like, holy shit, fucking seriously? Like, I just got my mind blown as a fan. And this guy just got $75. And, you know, later on I found out they were told not to do it, and that was, like, the penalty of doing it. And I'm like, wow. That But still,
I got victim to that once. There's a payday cut. And I didn't even do anything crazy. What did I do? I did I think we broke a chair. It was me and Moxley. And we it was a legit accident. Like, I think I jumped over the railing or something, and I broke a chair. And I got a lot of heat for it, and I got, like, $20 taken out of my pay for it. And I remember being like, what the fuck? It was like such a – that was when Rogers being a dick. Like, I'm going to go on record, and I'm going to tell you that DJ is the best – one of the best promoters, at least top two, that I've ever worked for my entire life. You know,
that's great.
He's definitely for the boys. And, you know, and there's really nothing – like, you could joke around and say all the bad shit about DJ you want, but – fucking the things that he has done for the guys.
it's not the show for that, but I have time.
Like the things that he's done for the guys, it's uncanny that no other promoter would do. You know, like when Scotty, when the glass cut his finger, he gets surgery. Like, he paid for Scotty's surgery, and then he paid him while he was out. You know what I mean? And he's done that a number of times for guys like that. And oh my God, why am I running blank? The guy that broke his femur.
The what? His finger?
Femur.
Oh, his femur. Dustin Reyes.
Justin Reyes. Yeah, Dustin. When Dustin hurt himself, it was his very first show in CZW. Like, he traveled with us up there. And he had to stay the night in the hotel, or the, not the hotel, the hospital. He just flew him home and paid his bill. Like, no, like, other promoters would be like, fuck off, you're done. So, you know, JC got his pay cut. Everyone got the pay cut for stupid little things. In the end, DJ really takes care of the boys.
Well, I mean, JC still worked there.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things that you go through stupid shit, but in the long run, you know what I mean? DJ is one of the better promoters I've worked for my entire life. But, yeah, like, pay cuts,
but,
I don't agree
you know,
with that whatsoever. But, you know, it's...
Yeah, I mean... And as a fan, to me, it's like, you know, it's one of those taboo things the fans aren't supposed to know and blah, blah,
yeah,
blah,
absolutely,
blah, blah.
But
in the same token, when your mind is blown by how violent and how over the top a match is, and then you find out, like, 75
yeah.
bucks, like, man, I almost paid that for me and my girl to get here. Like, no, actually, I think I overpaid for that just for gas money and the tickets and maybe leaving work early or something like that. Like,
yeah.
I paid more than this guy on the main event is making. Like, that's tremendous shit to me. That actually makes me respect the guy a million times more, because I'm like, wow, fucking really?
Yeah,
you're
in reality,
that
happens
me?
A lot. You know, that happens
I know.
A lot, you know?
I know.
And like you said, not a lot of fans know that, and those little things like that. But it's like, we do this for your guys' pop. When you guys pop, or you're buying into something that we think you would buy into, you know, and cheer at the right point and boo at the right point, we get such a rush, you know?
Right.
And that's what we get caught up in, you know, because a lot of us, we don't make money in this. And that's when those guys get caught in that deathmatch, because then you start making a little bit more here and there. So, yeah, dude, it sucks, but...
No, I understand it. And it's like I was saying, and I don't know what happened to Joe, or John Gray was supposed to call in too. He's been a friend of him for years. But just overall, from, you know, listening to everything, it does seem like, yeah, I mean, the money is in doing that, but we're not talking money as in money. We're talking like, well, you know, makes it a little more worth it. But in the same token, I mean, these guys are going above and beyond because they want to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, I mean, it's, you know, very respectable at the very, very least as a fan. I mean, if you have half a mind in you to see this and go, hey, man, I wouldn't do one of those fucking things, let alone the whole match. That's insane. But,
yeah,
you know, you got to give these guys credit where it's due. And
absolutely.
That's why, you know, people should really just keep JC's name in their, you know, just keep it alive. Because this guy was one of those guys, no matter what, you know.
Yeah, I talk about him every chance I get. You know, I tell that story about the Kane Burke thing all the time, just because it's, one, it's funny, and two, it just shows his character, how lighthearted he was, how awesome he was, you know. So, I don't know, everyone misses him, and the people that didn't know him, I think they feel, well, it's another guy that, you know, passed away or whatever, but... The people that didn't know him, you realize how much of an impact it was, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, like,
for sure.
It sucks that the fans nowadays won't ever get to see his, you know, him again, you know, but his style, his demeanor in the back, you know? He's such, there's very few of us that make the fans our friend, you know?
Right.
You know, and the ones that are lucky enough to, like, get that friend status, you really see how everyone is in the back, and, you know, and things like that. You know, there's few fans that are just like weirdo fans. You're kind of like, all right, whatever, ha, ha, ha. But those ones that are
right.
genuinely nice, you get to see the real person. And JC kind of focused in on those people, you know, like yourself and Nina. And
yeah.
It's like you get that connection. You're like, man, he's more than just a wrestler. He's kind of like a good guy to hang out with. He's a buddy. And,
sure.
You know, and you know, certain people are like that. And those lucky few that get to see us in those moments, you know, you really get to see what's going on and how things really work behind the scenes when we kind of why we do things the way we do it.
Yeah. Now, to summarize, you know, what I started out saying, I don't know if you heard anything I said, you know, before I had you go on, but I'm going to repeat it because this is overall my general statement on it, is that JC is one of those guys that bring credibility towards deathmatch wrestling. You know, he was such a hybrid wrestler. He did so many things. When he walked out to the ring, you saw him looking around and figuring out whether things were in the right spot, because he had things in his mind that were going to go on in that match. Now, previous to JC and, you know, several other guys coming into the business, a lot of deathmatch wrestling was just enormous guys hitting each other in the forehead with stuff and
yep.
kind of sloppy bumps and stuff. it really evolved into guys who wanted to make it more of an art and an actual another style that, that could be respected. And, of course, Japan was doing it for a long time, but JC was one of those guys. I mean, he could do some stuff. He could wrestle Chris Hero, and then he can go and do a circus death match. He can do so many different things that when he does a death match, he's looking around that ring and how is this going to work? What's going to make sense? Where am I going to do this? Where should that be? You know, he's slapping hands with the fans and you could just see his eyes darting around. Like, where is this? Where is that? Where should that be? Like it's a complete, like it's a set. Like he's doing a scene here and he's making sure this all falls into place for him to do the right thing that he wanted to do. And I mean, that's where the respectability comes from, that where people like to trash deathmatch wrestling and just say, oh, they're just swinging shit and cutting themselves. I'm like, well, that's where you're wrong because of guys like JC.
Yeah, absolutely. I always think of it, people like Terry Funk, you know, fucking NWA world champion and one of the pioneers of like the American fucking deathmatch scene, you know? And then something got lost in between Terry Funk and up until JC and Drake and Scotty, you know, Sammy, you know, all those guys, you know, my man Danny Havoc. It's like where you put it together in such a way where you could go out there and wrestle someone that doesn't do death matches and then the next weekend do that. And how do you put that together and make it interesting, you know what I mean? And so when it was lost, those guys came around and they kind of like brought it back, you know, the mixture of the lucha style with deathmatch, you know, and then the strong style with the deathmatch,
there's a lot of it that pulls it together that actually makes it work. And I think, you know, guys like JC were definitely one of them. I can name a bunch of other people, but as long as they're still here, you know, I talk about them every other week and I'm, you know, really just trying to put out there why JC was so important to deathmatch wrestling and all of wrestling, really, because, I mean, you know, the matches with Sanjay, the matches with, you know, the now Evan Bourne and Cassius Ohno and all these guys who are completely TV names. You could see the possibilities of a guy who was working them in 03.
Yep.
And just, you know, it's just my points there and, yeah, man. Rob, I can't thank you enough for coming on. I don't know if there's anything else you want to put out there. Have at it.
No, man. That's pretty much about it.
Cool, man. Yeah, I definitely need to have you on another show.
Yeah,
I got to pick your brain on
we got to talk about the games thing, too.
Yeah, I gotta talk about a bunch of topics with you, man. I got to pick your brain on a few things. I know you're doing the Billy Corgan thing. I think that's awesome. But definitely, man. Hit me up. We'll do this another week. But thank you so much for coming on, man.
It's all good, man. I'll talk to you later.
Awesome.
Bye.
Peace. So yeah, that was the Eagle Robert Anthony. He came through completely clutch and just stayed on for a long amount of time with me and shared tremendous amount of, you know, his opinions and thoughts on things. And I just love that guy, man. He's really good dude. Like I said, I really expected JC's father to come on tonight. The night before the anniversary of his son's passing, I don't blame him for 1 second. So, dude, you know, I hope you listen to this and much respect. You know, my heartfelt condolences, even this long after, completely go out to all his friends and family. Anyone who, you know, would have liked to call in and just couldn't, just didn't have it in him and stuff. You know, my condolences go out to you. Like I said, my only agenda on this show, normally I run, you know, my show on this night and stuff, and I just complete shenanigans and I just go off the fucking handle. But the fact is I respect what these guys do in the ring. And a guy like JC did such above and beyond things. For that guy to lose his life at 27 years old, it's a tragedy. It really, really is. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know what else to say, but the only thing I could do is keep that guy's name alive. Is never forget that guy existed within professional wrestling and did the things he did for us as fans. And that's what I'm doing tonight. That's all I'm doing tonight. I hope that came across on what I did. I'm not really sure, like I said. I have a really hard time with tribute shows. You know, a lot of good opinions and a lot of good things said from, you know, the people I had on tonight. You know, Drake, Robert, Toby, yeah, everybody. I mean, I don't know. I hope I did him proud. I'm not sure. But love JC. I miss him all the time. You know, watching wrestling cards and not seeing that guy because I felt he was the top guy. I knew he was the top guy. I didn't feel he was that. I knew he was the top guy. I knew he was a guy who should be involved in all these different cards that were booking him previously. He had risen to a status where you knew he can do anything on any card. There's no way he shouldn't have worked those. So, again, rest in peace, JC. Everybody shout him out. You know, tomorrow night, the 2-year anniversary of his passing, and, you know, tomorrow during the day, night, whatever it has been. But, yeah, rest in peace, JC. I think I'm going to wrap it up right now. And, like I said, you want to hear my normal douchebaggery, hit me up on Friday. I'm going to do an extra show on there. And, I think, let me check this real quick. Yeah. So, yeah, I think I'm going to wrap it up, and I hope I did okay for everybody, okay? Play JC's song again, and I'll see you on Friday with my normal stuff, but good night, everybody.
but you go to the back and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio. And we're taking over.
We're taking over. We're taking over.